Thought Leadership from PwC's National Office Studios.
There is this concept of partnership between employees and leadership that drives an organization in the same way as we're seeing brands and customers sort of have to work together.
Employers who engage their people are going to be the winners.
That's Angela Lester, a PwC partner in experience strategy and design, and Claudia Montgomery, a PwC managing director in organization and workforce transformation. This is Heather Horn, and thanks for joining me for the next episode of our Forecast 2021 podcast miniseries. If ever there is a time to take action designing the employee experience of the future, it's now. With the war for talent intensifying, employers are searching for ways to attract and retain talented employees. That's why we're talking today about the value of the employee experience, what it means, how to build it, and why it's so much more than just a compensation and benefits conversation. And now, let's get going with the show. So, Angela, Claudia, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you for having us here today.
I know your article is the four F's of employee experience, and we'll definitely include a link in our show notes. But what are those four F's? And what do you mean when you say the four F's of employee experience?
The four F's were basically, first of all, they are meant to all start with the same letter just so that it becomes memorable. And so we have the first F being form. And form is really around this concept of clarity. And what does that mean? That means that you're communicating to your employees in ways that they really understand for themselves, can prioritize, and that is sort of connected to the way the brand communicates also externally. So it's really around clarity. So I understand what I need to do. I understand how this works. I understand the value it's going to give me. The second thing is really around flow. What we see is that when employees get into a perfect flow, they are essentially highly, highly productive, but they're productive in a place where both emotionally and rationally things are just happening for them. So we talk a lot about how do you create a sense of flow in the way you experience things, whether it's going online to have to fill out forms that actually get you a result, or whether it's about collaborating in some way with others. The third is around feeling. We sort of forget we have a lot of feelings. And sometimes when you forget those feelings, you're not going to get that form and flow, right? So the whole feeling matters. And how do you make feeling work? Well, let's make it simple. In a technical environment, it's the font and the look and the feel, and whether it's easy to click that button and whether it's super clear that I don't have 10,000 things on a page that I have to do. I know what I need to do next, which is also flow. And then finally, it's function. And function really is about making it work for all people. We talked about designing for accessibility or diversity or disabilities, right? We are many different people, and we forget sometimes that we design for only a subset of who we are. Something super simple, like being left-handed versus right-handed, is diversity. Right. Most applications were originally designed so that you would use your right hand and your right thumb. And therefore, it would be really hard to do all your functions if you're on the other side. So something that simple, understanding that those two things exist. So you put the button in a way that both the right hander and the left hander can use it. That's a win. But it goes even further than that, which is making people really feel like it was designed with them in mind, that they were part of it. So that's the function. So form, flow, feeling, and function to me summarizes that we're creating environments that people feel like they're a part of, that stimulate both the emotional and the rational, and make them feel successful and happy at work.
Well, and it's exactly the way I think about the evaluation of the employee experience and the interconnected nature as I was describing it. And when we think about how we assess that and really how do we quantify something so esoteric, it's really four areas that are just basic things. If you think about what do I reflect on your own work experience and say, well, what is important to me? How would I measure my own work experience as a CFO or controller? You want to work with things you enjoy, concepts you enjoy, have a sense of purpose, have a sense of a vision for where you're headed. with the right tools and the things you need in order to not get in your way. You want to work with good people. People feel like you're part of a community, and you're working with leadership that you believe in, and you want to work for what you would describe as a supportive organization with a good sort of reward and benefit system for you, and that there are practices put in place that help you do your best. Those four areas, enjoyable work, productive environment, good people, and supportive organization, those are essentially the underpinnings of the four Fs.
So, Angela, maybe I'll go back to you. What other types of issues are you seeing companies address today?
Well, first of all, when we talk about sort of the shift of why it's become more important than ever, it's that we're shifting into a digital culture, no matter what company you are. And so what does that look like? You're going to have companies that are just starting on that journey and realizing the potential of building the right environment for their employees. And then you're going to have others that have already done it, but they've done it by patchwork, which is very common with larger organizations, right? Where they created something to solve one small piece of the problem, and then they need another problem solved for and another problem solved for, and they just keep adding technologies. So ultimately, we can come in at any point. And I'm working right now on a very, very large global project where they started off with looking at frontliners, and they had 15 different technologies ultimately that these frontliners need to do for something that really should have been consolidated into one. So that could be a common project in itself, or it could be very specific to a problem. For example, talent acquisition. Like, how do we increase our talent acquisition? I think Claudia, you're really good at that side of the world. Maybe you want to add a little bit around that piece.
So talent acquisition obviously is at the front end of the talent lifecycle. And really what we're trying to do in our focus on employee experiences is assess, I'll call it the interconnected levers of the experience, because it's more than just the technology. It's more than just, you know, comp and benefits. It's more than, you know, having a sense of purpose. It's how all those things work together to create what we call a connected experience, so that everything that I experience from the day I start having those conversations in the talent acquisition process all the way through, everything feels right. It feels like it was well thought out. And so understanding purpose of the company, the values of the company, making sure that those are woven into all of the experiences across, you know, the whole of the life cycle, critically important. But, you know, we start to look at what, you know, the competitive talent marketplace as we come out of the pandemic, just how significant the challenges are for so many employers. The employee value proposition and the employee experience really have the power to differentiate an organization and help a company secure the right talent in the competitive talent marketplace today.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I feel like in the past just week, I've seen so many articles about the shift in quote unquote power from the employer to the employee. Another article that said this is the best job market for teenagers, which I have too. So I was very focused on that one. And just in general, really focused on this idea of there maybe not being enough employees to go around. But let me ask another question, because, you know, in listening to you, I'm thinking about this and thinking, it almost feels like this is a problem for HR, or I guess our new term, human capital. How does a CFO or controller, where do they fit into this equation as you're thinking about employee experience? And how should they think about this?
I'll give you an example. I was on the phone with a client, and they said about 75 containers piled up on the docks waiting to be unloaded. They have no labor to unload. Their production is at a halt on two lines. If that doesn't impact the CFO, I'm not sure what will. And where are those employees? They're at an attractive employer down the road who opened an air-conditioned warehouse that involves less manual labor and a slightly higher wage. The war for talent in certain segments of the world, it's fierce war on talent. And so, yeah, these are very real issues when you're not going to make plan because you don't have the right people in the jobs that you need them. So it becomes very relevant very quickly.
You know, a lot of times it's easy to identify places to spend money, but deciding which ones are the best ones and then measuring the benefit from that, obviously there's some complexity there. So how do you see companies thinking about metrics in this, what I would consider almost in some ways, softer area?
I think we look at both areas, right? So traditional metrics look at things like increased revenue, reduced cost, and operational efficiencies, and they still matter. Those are the typical sort of ROI metrics. We do layer on something that we call ROX, and ROX is return on experience. And it's ultimately a holistic approach for understanding increasing value of your investments across customer experience, employee experience, and leadership experience. And it's important to see these three things interconnected, because when I talked about the financial metrics of increased revenue, well, that's how they come together, right? This connection between how the employee experience or the leadership experience actually enabled the customer experience. It's also an innovative way to rethink and redesign your entire dynamic impact across those elements. And it's, you know, it's an effective and scalable way. So how do we look at it? We look at it across many different measures. And one of the most important things is to get the right insights. For example, every brand has value system. And those value systems essentially create the promise of your brand, who you are. Not everybody understands how to behave or act those values, what it actually means to be part of those values. And therefore, we use quantitative measurements to really measure and understand from the employee's voice how they are understanding those values, what they're actually doing to behave like them, and how they can make a difference, right? So these are just examples. There are a lot of different measures we use for ROX. But again, we connect those ROX qualitative measures back to how it affects the overall culture of your brand and how that ultimately affects the ability for leadership to lead and grow and scale your company and deliver an optimal customer experience.
So Angela, you mentioned the fact that happy employees are, you get more value from them. And I know that's something I'm sure that piqued the interest of all of our listeners. So I think intuitively, we all realize that, right? If you go into a store, the sales clerk is friendly, nice, all those things definitely makes you want to be there more than if they're grouchy, talking to their coworker, no interest in you. But I'm sure there's more to it than that. So how do you think about it?
Ultimately, I think the most important thing is to remember we're all humans. And as humans, forget about the customer experience for a second and just think about the fact that we spend most of our time at work. And if you come to work because you have to, just about making money, right? It's very different than if you come to work because you really want to and you really love being there. What happens ultimately is if you can make that shift, we start seeing curiosity come in. People become curious. We start seeing collaboration. People want to collaborate and make things together, make things better. We start seeing things like, just generally speaking, feeling encouraged to be the best that they can be for the brand that they're working for. It's really almost immeasurable. But if you start thinking about different companies, I work with a company that's a supermarket chain, and they keep talking about how encouraged they feel to have fun with their customers, to answer questions about them, learn from them, and use that to inform the next product they're going to buy. That's really big. If you think about it, companies spend a fortune putting out insights platforms to learn that. But what if every one of your employees just did that naturally because that's what they love? That's the passion that they bring to work every day. Or how about people who choose a company because it aligns with their values and their belief system? And so that they can live those belief systems on a daily basis and feel motivated to give to the company, right? So these people aren't forced to sit at their desk 8 hours. They constantly think about how they can produce a better result and therefore become more innovative. So those are the type of things we look at. It's really about activating that whole human being on the rational side and on the emotional side to be the best person they can be at work.
And if I may, I guess, bridge what Angela just said to what's on the minds of a CFO or a controller, all of that boils down to one thing, and that's discretionary effort. What is the discretionary effort that your workforce has the capacity to apply across your organization? Because if every single person felt inspired and valued and compensated, if each person gave an extra, even just 5%, think about the difference in your workforce. Think about the difference in your revenue stream, your customer satisfaction, your, I mean, you can just go all around the business and see, you know, safety and quality and everything.
So how do you go from a company that maybe people don't want to work there or are just giving the minimum to this more innovative, happy, capture the whole person type of workforce? Are there any sort of key steps involved in that?
There are two sides of every organization. It's who you want to be as an organization and then who you already have working for you, right? So these two places have to come together. So there's no doubt that we need to learn where somebody needs to go. But in terms of actually shifting an entire organization to be there, be the culture you want it to be the motivation you want it to be efficient, that takes time, but it's the right type of time. Let me explain what I mean by that. None of us change overnight. And we are all humans, but we're also quite different. So one of the things that really matters for me is to start thinking in an agile fashion and accept the fact that you may fail fast once in a while, but that you will test, learn, and grow. And so what are the core principles to start with? The first for me is get to know your employees in a way you don't know them today. Right now, employees are very often metrics, just a bunch of metrics, typically like how utilized are they? How much revenue are they generating? Maybe you have other metrics. How quickly do they work? How many hours do they work? These are all metrics that might tell you whether you're delivering on some principles that are very important to the firm, but they don't really tell you again whether you're working against certain behaviors or changing cultures. So the first thing we need to do is create a test and learn environment where we bring in the voice of the employee. Now, what's really difficult about that is, let's say, if you want it to be a highly diverse organization and your voice of employees happens to be all male white people, you're not going to get the diverse voice. So sometimes what we have to do is say to ourselves, are we designing for inclusion or are we designing for our current state? And we really need to do both. So when we go in and we ask questions, we involve our employee, we start getting a sense of what's working or not working for them so that we can start making a change. We start to understand how they interpret the values of the firm and what their job is and their responsibilities are. We do that with the current base, but we also need to bring in that diversity, right? And very often that diversity may not be working at the company yet. So that becomes almost like a traditional recruit like you would be doing for any other customers that you want to target. So a lot of these principles are not that different than if you say to me, how do you gain a new target audience? Because we want to grow. Same thing. In your organization, you may have people that can make the type of change and become the type of people that you want them to, and then you may need to acquire new talent. So it's really about looking at both sides, measuring it frequently, listening to the voice, making changes, and remeasuring. It's an agile sort of framework that continues growing, and usually we see change around 1 to 2 years is the period of time that we like to measure against, because it takes that long for cultures to stick and for people to really change and become the type of leaders and the type of employees that A, makes sense for the firm and that they also want to be. Those two have to align very, very closely.
Yeah. So the 2 years, 1 to 2 years won't solve those containers sitting on the dock, which are really worrying me that you shared that story, Claudia.
Believe me, they're worrying me too.
But Angela, let me actually ask you a follow-up question. You talked about measurement and, you know, here at PwC, we have like our regular pulse surveys. And I know when I was an audit partner, I would see my clients do similar things where, you know, you're surveying your employees on a periodic basis. Is that what you mean by measurement, or is it something, is there more to it than that?
There's a lot of different measurement and every company has a different maturity level that they are comfortable with. So the lowest maturity, most companies are actually not even doing pulse surveys. What they're looking at is just clicks and pure numbers, right? So utilization numbers. Then the next layer is to add qualitative measures. It helps you understand what people are thinking ultimately and why they're doing certain things. And then the third layer is ultimately putting all together against the value system. So, you know, we've created a maturity models where companies are actually measuring absolutely everything, where your baseline sort of every task you do and how you succeed to how you feel to basically measures that employees actually create themselves. So we see sort of employee brand advocates or culture advocates. And ultimately what they do is they help us understand what are the most important things that employees value and we have to measure against. So it could be collaboration. That's a measure that sometimes comes out of employees that where they're saying, I just feel like I'm working too much on my own and I really need to collaborate and learn from others. So that becomes a measure that then is something that you can embrace as part of your value system, as part of your culture, and as part of your measurement system.
How do you change the employee experience? I mean, it doesn't happen overnight, but instilling a sense of collaboration, getting your leaders to model new ways of working around collaboration doesn't cost, it's not a huge capital expense, right? It's encouraging, aligning leaders on this is the way we're going to work. So these are the kinds of things. It's a combination of, you know, I'll say some low-hanging fruit, because sometimes what your employees really find meaningful is not what you thought. It's so important to listen. And, you know, historically, I will say the engagement survey has always been a really important part of employee listening. It's usually a pretty heavy duty survey that's done once a year that's really got some great information. But there's a lot more listening happening, pulse surveys, and even listening within the flow of work, within an app, within technology that's happening, you know, that somebody's using. There are things happening right, you know, as they're using it so they can get feedback and really understand how people are thinking and feeling real time. And that's the kind of listening that helps, you know, helps us understand kind of really what are the dynamics around employee experience. I think of an example of a systems implementation that was happening. And of course, what do we look at traditionally? The operational data. So we see, you know, 80% of employees have signed on to this new technology and the average time spent is increasing. And you think, oh, wow, that's great. Everybody's really embracing this new technology. And if you rely on the operational data, you're nodding your head and saying, great. But if you listen in the chatter on, you know, whatever the chatter platform is in the company, you realize actually that increased time is frustration. People are struggling with the technology. And unless you listen, you don't know this. And it's actually, there are a couple of things in the technology that are causing a significant amount of friction, things that can be remedied to actually make the rollout go much, much more smoothly. So those are the kinds of things that we're seeing now, sort of as we call it, the X and the O data coming together to create a system of measurement. And that's really ROX, our return on experience framework, that helps us read those two data feeds, if you will, and help to help clients make more informed decisions about workforce.
So Claudia, let me ask a follow-up question to that though, because the example you gave, it seems intuitive. Of course, you should address the problems if there's like underlying problems and frustration. But I want to think about something different with data, and I'll put my skeptic hat on, which I'm a company and I've been reading about, you know, let's say it's a warehouse or a grocery store, and you only have a certain amount of time because you're trying to put that order together, right? Now that so many people are getting grocery deliveries. And maybe from management's point of view, they want that done faster and faster. So that's what they're measuring. But then from the employee's point of view, they're feeling like there's not enough time, the grocery store is not organized the right way, there's customers asking me questions, whatever that is. How do you reconcile the fact that what management wants to measure is different than what the employee is actually experiencing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's such an important question. And the answer is it's a balancing act, right? But you can't just put your head in the sand and say, hey, we just have to drive the business strategy. Because if you do so to the extent to which it's undermining the employee experience, you know, we all know those people who kind of have their arms folded in the workplace and they're not really participating, or maybe they're just participating. So it is a balancing act. You're hitting the nail right on the head. That's why it's so important to listen, to prioritize what is both meaningful to drive the business strategy, but meaningful most meaningful for the employees. So you know where to focus the energies and design the solutions, because you can't do everything at the same time. It's just not possible. So where are you going to have, I'll say, the greatest bang for your buck, if you will, in addressing employee needs and driving the business forward. That's the place you need to spend your time, right?
Yeah, and I'd like to add just one factor, which I think is an important factor. Very often, employees don't understand, why do I have to be more efficient? Why do I have to, you know, why? You're driving me so hard. I think if you make them part of solving the problem and they feel like they're a part of it, they're more likely to want to do it as well. That's one of the things that we've learned a lot, is that business strategy can't just be enforced on people. They have to sort of understand the value of why they are playing a part in such a big transformation or change or whatever it is that's happening to the business. And they need to feel valued that they are a part of it. And to some extent also compensated for that. So if you're pushing them 5 times harder, what's the value to them to be able to do it? And how do they understand how much it's helped the organization grow so that they can feel pride? Pride is actually one of the ROX measures we look at. Pride in the brand, so that they can be an authentic, informal leader internally and help their team go faster, embrace that concept, right? And so a lot of the things that Claudio is talking about is really the voice is not about just saying, okay, employees want A and the brand wants B. It's about, okay, the brand wants B, but why doesn't it work for employees? How can we do it in a way that it's actually successful for them as well? Because it's a partnership at the end of the day, right? It's no different than if you're a brand and you're selling a product and then you're reading in social media that something's terrible about your product. You're going to want to adjust that product, right? It's the same thing. Your employees are part of your company. They're the most important asset you have. And therefore, you have to bring them along and learn from them so that you can be better all together.
So then let me ask a very specific question. So now with all of this background, if I'm listening and thinking I want to improve things for my employees, or I have something very specific, you know, I want to design for my employees, how do you go about designing a better experience? What are some of the key factors to that?
Yeah. So the first thing we do is we look at different persona models. A persona is a different behavioral and attitudinal view of the world. And so what's interesting about that is traditional research used to always look at role and where you sit within the organization. So if you're either sitting in IT, you might be thinking differently than if you're thinking brand. We really look at the attitudinal and behavioral side of it, which is, you know, how do you perceive things? How do you do things? And what makes you very different? So let's look at an example. So you might have somebody who's incredibly agile and innovative and has incredible energy. That person could be sitting in IT. They could be sitting in human resources. They could be sitting anywhere. Another persona might be one who just really struggles with change and cannot see the better in things. They just get stuck, right? So you're going to have all these type of personas in your organization. When you do your research, you want to be doing it against those personas. And of course, you can do it also by, are they sitting in IT? Are they sitting in this country, in this culture? Of course, as you can get as quantitative as you'd like. But a lot of organizations forget that first piece, which is a very, very important piece. Because when you're designing the new experience, you have to design for these different behaviors and attitudes and mindsets so that it works for everybody. So once you understand that and you get a sense of sort of what the differences are, you build persona models. And these persona models are simplified ways of understanding the people in your organization. Then we think about journeys. Like, what is your typical journey in your organization? And you can look at it all the way from like talent acquisition to the day that they retire. But it's more important than that. A typical journey is everyday life. Like, I come to work every day. What do I do? How do I think? What is the typical things that I engage with? Like, what is my typical life? And in that life at work, I'm going to have friction points, which are ultimately things we later prioritize as things we need to fix. And then we're going to have moments that matter. Like, what's really important to them? You know, because what may be important to an organization may not always be the same importance. So another a really good example of that is compensation. Compensation is not necessarily monetary. The idea of how do I contribute to an organization and get something back, that value exchange can come in many different forms. And not every employee is going to think about it the same way. but we want to find common moments that matter. It could be an award that they get. It might be recognition that they get. It might be their ability to be thought leaders in a space. We don't know what it is, but we want to recognize the moment that matters to each one of those personas and address that when we think about designing the new employee experience. So we start with personas. We then map it to the business units and whatever else makes sense to the organization. We create our journeys with friction points and moments that matter. All of those get put into a very large spreadsheet, and they get prioritized based on some very important pieces. The first is brand impact. Like, what's it going to do for my brand? Because those are some of the intangibles that we talked about. Like, if a culture changes, the brand can change. We look at business impact. Those are the more traditional things, like, can it add revenue? Can it help us go more quickly, you know, add speed? We look at operational efficiencies, like pure operational efficiencies, and so on and so forth. There's a number of metrics that we'll score against, and then all those moments that matter and friction points get scored into actual things that the organization can do. And then, of course, we map it back to our ROI system so that we can measure against it and adjust as we move along. So typical projects last about 3 months so that you can see actionable change and you can measure against those changes and start adjusting as needed.
And I'll add to that. That was beautiful. Thank you, Angela. All of that begins with a foundation of data. So understanding, what are we seeing today? What's working? What isn't? What are the gaps? And then that baseline serves as the baseline for measurement after these interventions are designed. And that creates that sort of, I'll say, that feedback loop, that closed system that helps us understand, you know, how are we really, you know, understanding what's going on, activating interventions, and really understanding how they are impacting our ability to drive the business strategy.
So Angela, Claudia, I think this is a great summary and definitely gets this level of enthusiasm if I were a CFO listening, thinking about what I could do for my own organization. So just one final question I ask all my guests, which is, if we fast forward for a year or two, obviously we've seen huge amount of change just in the past year from the pandemic. But if we were to fast forward, where do you think this conversation is going? Any other major changes or just more and more of what we've just been talking about now? And Angela, I'll go to you first.
What I'm seeing is that we're moving into a place where the difference between a leader, like somebody who's appointed as a leader, and somebody who becomes an informal leader becomes less significant. In other words, there is this concept of partnership between employees and leadership that drives an organization in the same way as we're seeing brands and customers sort of have to work together. I think that's a huge shift, and it's going to happen more and more. And we're going to see really, really successful change happen when the agility between all people to work together and listen to each other works well. That's really like exciting. And I think it's going to do one other thing, which is happening right now. It's going to bring the younger generation back to larger organizations. I think a younger audiences really want to be their own entrepreneurial spirit. They believe they have a voice and they want to use that voice. They don't want to have to work under somebody that tells them exactly what to do. And so that is an important change that really matters. That's very difficult for organizations that are hierarchical, but those that have already started shifting into sort of flatter organizations have seen how beneficial it is and how much it attracts and creates, let's say, a culture of change and innovation that's incredibly powerful, in my opinion.
Well, so that's actually inspirational for both the appointed leaders listening, and then if I'm maybe someone more junior in an organization, thinking about the impact that I could have. So I love that. And Claudia, any final words?
Sure. So I would say that as I look ahead, you know, the last year has been a catalyst for employee needs and preferences to shift even more dramatically than they had been prior to the pandemic. I believe many employers are understanding now intellectually the importance of listening to their employees much more frequently and really engage them in genuine partnership are going to be the winners. And I think in the years ahead, we're going to see a little bit more of the winners and the losers separating, because I think it's one of those situations where you got to get on the bus. Wherever you are, you got to get on the bus and start moving, because you're going to get left behind if you don't start thinking about what your people really need. The talent marketplace is going to teach a hard lesson to those who don't tune into their workforce.
All right. Well, as I said, we'll include a link to the article in the show notes, and hopefully at least a few people listening have been inspired by this and will jump on that bus so they can be on the winning team, as you said. So again, both, really appreciate all your insight, and thanks so much for joining me. If you're ready to learn more about the four F's of the employee experience, head over to the episode show page at viewpoint.pwc.com for a link to the article talked about in this episode. And join me back here every Tuesday and Thursday for new podcast episodes. So that you never miss one, subscribe to the PwC Accounting Podcast Series wherever you listen to your podcasts. And to stay up to date on all the latest content, let's connect on LinkedIn. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and they sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.